This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
The Custer's Black Podcast, whatever that is.
Yeah. Now, I was born in Glasgow and then moved down when I was about seven, down to Southend. And, I lost the accent pretty quickly because talking like that in the playground is not so good in Essex. So, I lost that pretty quickly and got this kind of hybrid estuary thing that comes out of my mouth.
I guess most people will recognize you as Lance from Phone Shop, and then Alan Cooper, also known as Simon's dad from The Inbetweeners. I think the first thing we kind of had on our little list of questions was how did you sort of fall into acting and the stuff you're doing there?
Well, I literally fell into it because I worked in the city for a while in a different life, and then kind of gave that up because it was awful, and then I didn't really know what to do, so I kind of co-ran a comedy club, Joker Comedy Club in Southend. So I knew kind of some of these comics, you know. Lee Evans used to compare down there, and Lee lived in Lee, and he sort of encouraged me to go and do stand up. So I did stand up, and long story short, he saw me in I did the Edinburgh Festival, and he came to see one of the shows, and basically Lee gave me my biggest break really, because he came along and said, look, I'm doing a show. Do you want to do some writing on it? A little bit of writing. And it's 99% him. So I said, yeah. And then we wrote some sketches for it. And then he said, do you want to do them? I went, hey, what? And he said, yeah, do you want to do them? Because we haven't got anyone else. I went, oh, okay. So we did a little sort of art center tour. I'm guessing to make sure I could do it properly, you know. And then we did a West End run. So my first proper acting job was 10 weeks in the West End. So, and then suddenly I was an actor and agents came to see me. I was signed up by an agent and suddenly I was going to auditions and acting. This is 26 years ago, whenever it was, long time ago. So I kind of learnt on the job really.
That is phoning at the deep end now, isn't it, West End?
Oh, yeah, that is properly thrown in the deep. Great fun. I loved it. But I haven't really done much theatre since, actually. I've done a couple of short plays, but theatre's not really my forte, I don't think. I did really enjoy it, but no, it's telly, really, for me. Telly and radio. I love doing radio, actually. Love radio.
Was you a bit nervous going into was you a bit of a natural here? Was you nervous or what? I mean, I would be absolutely shit.
Yes, theatre is very much sink or swim, isn't it?
I think very much so. Yeah. No, I think I was very nervous. Yeah, there's no question of that. But ever since I was about 6 or 7 years old, I wanted to be James Bond. So I'd always kind of wanted to be an actor, but I never thought I'd be able to do that. That's why I didn't go to RADA. They wouldn't have had me in, I didn't think. But I'd always, it had always really interested me. When I was a kid, I made short films as well on a sort of kind of a video camera type thing, you know, and before that on Super 8 film. Excuse me. So I've always been really interested in telly, in that art form and acting. So I suppose it didn't come as a massive surprise to me that suddenly I was doing that.
After that, I mean, I've noticed you've credited a lot of writing material, things like Never Fox and 8 out of 10 Cats.
Yeah.
Like you say, so the breakthrough came, but how did then that come about? Because that seems like quite a jump to me.
Well, that came about because I was still doing stand up, and people found out that I'd done some work with Lee, and various other people came in and said, you know, would you help me with a bit of writing? It's a slightly sort of dark art, actually, because basically some stand-ups, when they're on shows, they really, hang on a minute, I'll turn this bloody phone off. Go away. Ah, sorry, guys.
All right, fun.
So trying to ring me at 6:10 on a bloody Sunday. Go away. Apologies. Yes, it's a bit of a dark art, the writing for performers, because actually they're in charge of it. They mold it. And, it, you know, 95% of what is said on stage or on screen is by them. But they do sometimes use writers like me. And often we're kind of an insurance policy. But I can't remember who the first person was who asked me. It might have been Ardal O'Hanlon. Because I supported Ardal when he was doing Father Ted. He did a tour, and on part of that tour, I supported him. And he asked me to do some writing for him, so which I did. And then other people kind of find out, and I did a bit of writing with Bill Bailey back on in 98, I don't know, something like that. That was for a show up in BBC Scotland, and I did some other bits with him. And then Sean, I bumped into Sean in Sean Locke in Edinburgh, and he said, "Oh, you know, you do some writing," and he got me in to write the first radio series of 15 Stories High, which then went on to do another radio series and then two TV series, which I co-wrote with him. And then, you know, because I'd worked with Bill before, Bill got me in to do Buzzcocks. And then because obviously I'd written with Sean before, he got me in to do 8 out of 10 Cats and Cats Does Countdown and various other bits and bobs. And it's a sad, sad loss that he's not with us anymore, because he was a genius and a very, very good friend, a very close friend, and fiercely loyal, and the best night out you could ever have, ever.
I can imagine. I've got that 15 Stories are behind me. I love that program.
Oh, do you? Oh, bless you.
We like the two series, on DVD. So.
Right, right.
Yeah, so see, I don't think, maybe I'm doing the general public a bit of a disservice, but I don't think many people would be aware that you've done all that, because sort of a lot of it, your face isn't to it. I'm not sure people are aware of like what people have written for.
No, I don't think they are. I don't think they are aware. We used to be credited as writers, but we're not anymore. We're credited as program associates.
Right.
But I mean, the reason is, you know, stand-ups and people on telly, they don't necessarily want people to be it broadcast, even though I am now, broadcast that they have writers. But, you know, a lot of people do know that they've got writers, because television is a really hungry beast. It just, it, you know, you've got a day maybe to write, to think of some stuff on 8 out of 10 Cats. I have to say, with Sean, I wrote with him on all the series of 8 out of 10 Cats and nearly all of the series for Cats Does Countdown. And I can't stress enough, 90% of the stuff he has written, and a lot of that didn't even get on screen. An enormous amount of he is thinking on the hoof on the show. So, as I say, we were often sort of a kind of insurance policy is if he just went blank and went, I can't think of anything, that there would be something to say, you know.
So what does that involve? This might sound a bit of a weird question. What does that involve? So are you writing sort of like the gags for it, or
writing the gags for it. And I mean, on 8 out of 10 Cats, you kind of, you know what the news, you don't want, we've got no idea what the questions are going to be. You don't know what's going to be asked. But on the the topical round at the beginning, you kind of know, well, there's going to be stuff about Brexit, or there's going to be stuff about whatever it is. So you just write some gags about Brexit, or you know, the Queen stumbling over a thorn, whatever stories were around. It's a weird thing. You go into an office and you sit down, you get there at 10 o'clock and you have a cup of tea, you sit down and you go, right, let's try to be funny. And it's an odd thing that you have to sort of sit there with a newspaper and go, is this funny? Is this a funny idea? I don't know.
I think that's a great art, that, because I think obviously you can make a joke in the moment, but like having to actually think about writing jokes, I think that's quite incredible art, actually.
There's not that many people that do it in the country. I don't know what it is now. All these youngsters are coming up. I'd say 40 people, maybe.
No, it's not a lot.
35, 40 people, something like that. Yeah, not a lot at all. No, it's not a massive, there's not hundreds of us. No.
I mean, we are obviously a football podcast, primarily a Southend football podcast, but we will come to that. Just for a moment, I think we both will completely fanboy it. And as I had mentioned last week when I bumped into you, you are talking to like two of probably the biggest in-betweeners fans like going. Genuinely, there's not a day goes by where I don't think we quote it in some way or another to each other or in a group chat. Yeah, it's stood the test of time. Probably one of the most relatable programs that I've ever watched. How was that?
That was, it was extraordinary how it took off. I mean, I got the call to go for an audition on from my agent on the Friday, and she said, "Right, you've got an audition, you've got casting tomorrow," and I said, "Nah, you must mean Monday." She went, "No, tomorrow." I went, "Hey, Saturday? No one casts on Saturday. That's insane." And she said, no. She said, it's last minute because I'm not really sure why it's so last minute. They couldn't find someone. I don't entirely know. So she said, there's a few of you going along. I've done the deal before you even get the part. So just in case you do get it. And I said, right, okay. So my wife and I were booked to go away for the weekend. And I had to say, I've got to go to casting. So she went, all right. So as I left, she shouted out, "You better bloody get it." So I went, right, okay. Yeah. So I went off there. There was a few of us there. I went into the casting, a big long table. I'm sitting opposite Ian and Damon, who wrote it. And then the producer, and then Gordon, the Gordon Alexander, the director. So I did my piece, and I did a few other scenes, and they asked me a couple of questions about the part and how I was going to play it. And I write, okay. So normally then, in an audition, what normally happens is they go, thanks very much, Martin. And you, it's all unsaid. You know, someone will be in touch with your agent. You either got it or you haven't. So you get up and you go. That didn't happen. I was just sitting there and no one kind of gave me that trigger, that release word to sort of go, off you fly, go away. No one gave me that. So I was just sitting there and they all sat there, just the other side of a table, whispering to each other. And I was going, oh my God, this is toe curling. So I just started looking at the script a bit more and they're whispering. And they whispered for about, I mean, it felt like about 5 minutes, but it was probably about 30 seconds. And I was just going, oh God, do they want me to get up? Do they want me to leave? Did I not hear them? Did they say, thanks very much? That's, you can go now. So I just sat there and Ian, who produced it and wrote it with Damon, Ian just leant across and goes, you got the part. So I went, oh, blimey, amazing. And then this is very unusual, by the way. This doesn't happen normally. And they pushed six TV scripts, six in between the scripts across the table, went, there you go. So it's a pile about that big. And I go, right, I go. And you're in the first scene Monday morning. See you 8 o'clock Monday. So I got out of there. And the process is that someone from production will ring you up. We're very lucky we get picked up in a car to go to a location and we get a car home. It's basically because they don't trust actors to get a train or a bus or drive themselves. They don't trust actors. We are idiots. So we must be picked up. Thank God. But we must be picked up and held, our hands held, to go into makeup and then into costume and then onto set. So I was picked up, 6 o'clock on Monday morning. And, 8:05, I'm standing outside. It was the tailors outside the tailor. When they get, they're getting a new suit. And that was the first scene. I didn't even have the part. Less than 48 hours. Ridiculous. But, yeah, and no one knew this was going to be a big show. No, it was just another gig. You just think, great, I've got 6 weeks' work. This is lovely. It's a lovely part. I didn't really know how to play it. I did know how to play it, but it was only when I got there and I got the costume on and I thought, yeah, I think he's like this, And the director, Gordon, came over with a couple of notes and he said, oh, I think you're nailing it, and that was it. We between us, we created this terrible monster.
That classic embarrassing dad.
We had to sort of play it straight. You have to play it with a kind of a straight bat, so that it's believable. So that you don't have that. There was a danger to play that character where he had a sort of a real twinkle in his eye, so he was taking the piss.
Yeah,
that's different because he wasn't taking the piss. He was genuinely saying that stuff. One of my favorite scenes was when I came in and the boys are playing on a video game, Nintendo or whatever it is. And I walk in and costume had given me a kimono thing. And I said, have you got one shorter? Have you got one a bit shorter? I just thought the other one was a bit too long. And I thought, it's just funnier if it's shorter. So they found one and I put this shorter one on. Because it was more of a dressing gown before, and I put this sort of shorter thing on. And then I come in and I say, oh, hi. And he said, I thought you'd left home. I said, no, me and your mum have made up, I said, oh, yeah. Well, mum's upstairs. I go, then they go, all right, yeah. And there's that beat, and I go, you got any Johnnies? And it's in front of his mate. And you have to play that really straight. Otherwise it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But a great character, a lovely, lovely character to play. Yeah.
No, it was. It goes all the way to the big screen as well. You get two movies out of it.
I know. And the first series, it didn't really, it did okay, but it wasn't sort of huge. It was on E4, it was kind of tucked away, it wasn't massive. And then we got another series, and series two sort of crept up quite a bit more, you know, but the it was just when sort of just about when social media was kind of picking up a bit, and it was much more word of mouth, actually, I think, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then the third series just went absolutely insane. There was kind of, I mean, E4 back then was getting, I'd say, average of, I'm plucking figures out of nowhere here, but I'm guessing around about 800,000 viewers was a really good show. 600,000, you know, this was getting over 5 million.
Jesus.
It was absolutely smashing everything. It was insane.
Wow.
And then they did the movie, and that was great fun. And yeah, that, you know, yeah. And actually, strangely, Phone Shop was a strange casting as well. That just occurred to me. Phone Shop was weird because Phone Shop was written by Phil Bowker, and he wrote it, produced it, and directed it. And he also produced 15 Stories. So I already knew him from there. I was doing some writing at the production company Talkback that he was at. And he came upstairs and he said, "Oh, can you pop down at lunchtime just to do me a favor? Because we're just improvising some stuff with some guys just for this little silly idea I've got." So I said, "Yeah, okay, fine." So I went down there, spent about half an hour, 40 minutes down there just improvising comedy bollocks, you know. Sorry, are you allowed to swear on you?
Yeah, you can say what you like.
Yeah, right. Yeah, improvising comedy bollocks. I had a great laugh. Phil said, "Thanks very much. I'll buy you a beer after work." Yeah, right, okay. Forgot all about it. About 2 weeks later, I got a call from Phil, and he said, hi. He said, "You've got the part." I went, "Eh? What are you on about?" He said, "No, I filmed it all. Everyone at Talkback loves you. I wanted you to get the part, but I didn't want you getting nervous about it. So I got you down. It was a casting, and we're doing a pilot, and we shoot it in 6 weeks' time." All right. What's going on? So that was a weird audition as well. So, and that went on to do 19 episodes, three series and a pilot.
Yeah, I couldn't remember any series I've done, actually. I didn't forget about it, but it's quite a while ago now. It's longer than you realise, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The last series went out in, blimey, I think it was 2014. It might have been 2013, but somewhere around there. So, yeah. It's all still on all four. Phone Shop's all still on there. I get recognised from both of them, really, in equal measures. I think Phone Shop was a slow burner. It wasn't nearly as big as the in-betweeners, but through word of mouth now, it's become not as big, but much bigger than it was when it went out.
Yeah.
I must admit, I only watched it sort of retrospectively. I didn't watch it when it came out. I think it's through word of mouth, or like say with the streaming services, you can just put that on and watch it.
Yeah, Of course, you know, the in-betweeners, I really don't think the in-betweeners would get made now. It wouldn't.
It's mental, that, isn't it? Because it actually wasn't all that long ago. And
no.
Yeah, you're right. It probably wouldn't. But it literally was. It was that word of mouth that I got introduced to it. It was actually my driving instructor at the time told me. She was like, "Oh, have you been watching the in-betweeners?" I think it was kind of at the start of the second series. And I was like, "No, I've never heard of it." And she was like, "Oh, like, you should watch it. I think it's right up your street." And I'm not sure what she meant by that. I'm not sure what sort of, I'm not sure what opinion she had of me to say that. But I jumped straight on it, and I never looked back with it.
Right. Yeah. It was. It's a very naughty show. Very naughty. But you know, so relatable for everyone. So incredibly relatable, and great fun to do. And you know, I loved working.
And ultimately, it was quite light-hearted as well. Really, like, yeah, it probably wouldn't be allowed to be filmed now, but it was light-hearted. It wasn't, you know, serious, you know.
Well, I think if I'm right in saying, I mean, Ian and David might clout me for this, but I think I'm right in saying they originally wrote it, and it was 20-somethings. It was that they were, you know, I think they were students or something like that. And Channel 4 really liked the script, but they said, look, it's, you know, it's really sort of quite offensive. You know, they're young men, you know. Why don't we make them school kids, you know? So why don't we make them sort of 15, 16, you know? Because then they can kind of get away with it. They can get with that sort of naivety. So they did, and it worked well, you know, as we all know.
The rest is history. It was, as literally that word relatable, because I think every teenage school kid has been at least one of those characters at any one of those scenes. We've certainly all been there.
Yeah.
Considering it was hitting about 5 million views, do you sort of, it wasn't your call, but do you sort of regret there wasn't another series, or do you think 3 was perfect and it was the right time and, you know, quality over quantity?
I think, I think 3 was right. I think because I don't know whether Ian and Damon thought that there might be some films and movies afterwards, but they had to move on to that fairly quickly because these guys, you know, time goes on and they're getting older and older. Kind of, you know, can't play that sort of 16, 17 year old anymore because they're, you know, 30 with kids. So I suppose they made that choice to go, look, we're going to make a film instead. And they managed to make 2 with a bit of makeup.
I still think it's good for a third, a wedding or something, a stag do.
Yeah, a stag do would be good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the films were pretty good, I thought.
You know, great.
I think the first one's probably better than the second one, because I'm in it more.
Which one was it? What film was it? It's the second one. It's the second one, isn't it? With the water slide. You know what was it? Me and Farms were in the cinema. Like the pair of us were like folded up, crying at that scene because you knew it was coming, but still, it was like the execution of it was like sublime.
It was beautifully done, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For a poo joke, beautifully done.
That's what I mean. You could see it coming, but still, it was like, I still wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Right, should we move on to some football?
Yeah, let's do that.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with 3 for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Should we go way back to the start? So you say you moved down to Southend. What are your earliest memories of following Southend?
Well, I think my earliest memories were when I was about, I suppose I was about, God, it's a long time ago, you know. I suppose I was about 14 or maybe 15. I think I was 14. And my uncle started to take me over there because my dad wasn't really into football. My brother was into football, but he was quite good at playing football. So he would go and play on a Saturday afternoon for various teams, you know. So the and my mates were at the time were kind of into it, but not that much. But my uncle loved Southend. So he took me over there when I was about 14. And Derek Spence was playing. And I always remember the North Bank was singing Derek Spence is an international because he played for Northern Ireland. And I loved it from the first. We stand in the paddocks, which is the east stand.
Yeah.
Used to have a sort of a standing bit at the front of it. And from the first time I went, I absolutely loved it. And then I kind of drifted away a bit, then came back in the sort of late '80s. But really, the time I spent most down there was the late '80s to the mid-90s, and then I kind of moved up to London. So it was Brett Angel, Ian Benjamin, Andy Anser, Steve Tilson, Chris Powell, all that mob.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad side back then, was it?
No, it really wasn't, no. Spencer Pryor, I always remember that really cruel song they used to sing, because I always thought Spencer Pryor was a pretty safe pair of boots, to be honest. You know, they used to sing, they said, find a buyer for Spencer Pryor. I think they sang it because it rhymed. They didn't really think it through. That he was actually all right centre back. You know, but yeah, I mean, my memories down there are. I love watching Brett Angel because you never knew what was going to happen. He was 6'5" or whatever he was, like a rake. His arms and legs were all over the place. I don't think he scored a goal from further out than 8 yards. He was just a handful. He wasn't. I don't remember him being particularly pacey. He was a great header of the ball, and him and Ian Benjamin had such a great. Partnership, you know, because Ian Benjamin would hold the ball up Ian Benjamin hold the ball up and, you know, lay it off to him, as I say, about 6 yards out. Then, but you never knew where the goal was going to come from. It was just kind of, there's so many goals I seem to remember that Brett Angel scored where behind the goal they cheer and you go, oh, have they scored? Because it was just a melee of people. He managed to crack the ball in the back of the net. He was great to watch. I loved him. And then, actually, Chris Phillips said the other day, I was down at the match the other day and I was speaking to Chris Phillips from the Echo, and he was saying that the communication now from the club and the social media and, you know, you really get to know what's happening in your team, or your club, you know, injury news, and there's rumours about a transfer or something like that. Back then, he was saying, I don't remember this, but he was saying, I remember coming down and the announcement went something like, oh, if you're expecting to see Brett Angel playing today, he's gone to Everton. Now, here's the team sheet. You go, what do you mean he's gone to Everton? When did that happen? Oh, last night. Yeah, so you didn't really hear as much stuff about what was going on. But I do remember we used to watch from the West Stand, and I remember coming to see a match, and they'd signed Stan Collymore the day before, and I went down with all my mates, and I we were sort of going, Who's called Stan these days? He's going to be 72, and you know, Stan, Jesus Christ, why are we signing players like this? This is insane. And my memory of it, and I don't know whether it is true, but my memory of it is that Stan came out and there was a big cheer and kicked off, and within about 5 or 6 minutes. My memory is that the West End went quiet because he was just stunning. I mean, He absolutely took the piss in that division. We were just gobsmacked, just going, "Oh my God, he's the Messiah." He was amazing. He was amazing, you know. And he did, you know, he did take the Mickey in that division. He just he rampaged through defenses. He was unbelievable. Best player I've ever seen in a blue shirt.
Oh, definitely. I bought the DVD Always Goals to Southend quite recently. And
did you?
Some of the goals are just a joke.
Yeah. They're amazing, aren't they? I seem to remember him running and then stopping, putting the ball, his foot on the ball, and then sort of doing that, sort of jigging around, and then going around other players. Yeah, he was amazing.
It's almost like he'd let the defender think he had a chance, let him catch up with him a little bit, and then, I'm off again.
Exactly. Yeah. He was amazing.
Yeah, sadly, Stan in his playing days was just before my time. So, but yeah, it's the same. I've bought that DVD, and yeah, the goals he was scoring were absolutely incredible. If I could go back to like any time in like Southend's history, I think it would have to be that one. Those 30 games, just to witness that.
Yeah, I also remember. I remember Chris Powell's first game. It was his first game. And we were in the North Bank for that one. And he brought someone down in the box, and it was a penalty. And he was on his knees. He ended up on his knees like that, facing the North Bank like this. And the referee didn't blow up for it. And everyone sort of carried on. And he faced the North Bank, and he crossed himself. And immediately won over the fans, you know. And he was probably the second best player I've seen down there.
Well, as a player for England.
Yeah. He was amazing. Amazing. But we had other great players as well, you know. We had, you know, dogged midfielders, you know, Phil Gridlett and Steve Tilson and Andy Anser. He was great as well on the right wing. Although, his name, unfortunately, every week it would be the same headline in the Evening Echo. Andy has the answer. it was just, yeah. But yeah, we had a lot of managers, didn't we?
Yeah, it's like been the last sort of 5 or 6 years.
That was a good idea. Just going. I've seen some of the YouTube videos of them. People like, even like Ricky Otto and stuff, they're just a joke.
That team was a joke. It's probably quite, you look at it now and it's like, oh God, could you imagine if that team actually got promoted, got to the Premier League?
I know. Yeah. It was amazing.
It was flirting with the idea for a while, wasn't it? And then
it really was. I mean, there was a real buzz, an incredible buzz around the place. Nearly, very nearly.
One day.
Yeah. And now we're in the National League. Yeah. That was a sad day.
It's all good
day.
Fun.
Yeah.
Unfold that, isn't it?
We're all still there, though, aren't we? Well, I'm not there that much because I'm in West London, but I'm there in spirit. And I was there last week. Yeah.
Yeah. So what have sort of sometimes where you, like you admit you are watching from afar sometimes, but what have you made of sort of the recent decline? You know, we seem to have got our act together a little bit in the last 6 months or so, but how were you feeling within the last sort of 2 to 3 years?
I think it's, you know, I don't know the politics that goes on there down there, but the embargoes and the non-payment of VAT, I think, is the root of all of these problems, because managers have come in and they haven't been able to sign people. They haven't been able to do what they want to do. I don't know whether they've been promised stuff that's now not delivered. I mean, I felt very sorry for Mark Molesley. I think he's probably a decent coach, a decent manager, but he had nothing to play with. You know, I mean, they signed Akinola and he couldn't play for about 3 months. You know, he's cleaning everyone's boots. You know, it's crazy. And then some of the players that we've signed, and I'm not going to name names because I think that's cruel. And I'm not in the business of slagging people off because, you know, I'm in they're in the entertainment business and so am I. And I don't like it when people slag me off. I won't name names, but some players have been brought in that just weren't up to it. They were not up to it. I think probably a few players from the youth team were shoved in and they weren't ready. And it was I watched all of that season on iFollow and it was one of the most horrendous seasons I have ever seen. It was awful. Mm. And soul destroying, you know. And, you know, the recruitment has been horrendous in some parts. And then to bring Phil Brown in and you go, you know, my heart did sink. I am naming someone and I apologize, Phil. I do apologize. But my heart did sink because I should have thought, why? We can't go backwards again, you know.
That's the nicest way of wording that. I don't think you've done him too much of a disservice.
Well, I hope not. I hope not. But because I genuinely don't want to do that. But, you know, if we were going to go backwards, Tilly, get Tilson back in. Someone's got some passion and belief about the club. But they didn't go that way. And he's in charge for six games and he didn't do it. He did change things a bit. And then in the summer, then you read, oh, he's carrying on as manager. You go, no. No. Why are you? No. Oh, God. Anyway, to be fair, he did. I suppose he signed Dolby, didn't he? No, yeah. He signed Jack Bridge and Dolby.
And Murphy and Arnold.
He did sign some good players, in fair. Not that.
Yeah. He signed Arnold as well. He did sign some decent players. To be fair, yeah, yeah. Well, they're good players. Arnold's brilliant. So is Dolby.
I think he's a great keeper.
Yeah, I haven't seen Murphy play, so I don't know. Is he any good?
I think he's certainly a goal scorer and probably a little bit similar to Jack Bridge, really, where at the start of the season they were playing in a poor side. Mm. But he was still nicking like a good goal return for the side that he was in. So it would actually be quite interesting to see him in the team at the moment to see what he could do where there's, you know, we've now got an influx of better players around
him. Yeah. Yeah. I like the look of... as I say, I went down there to see them play Solihull Moors. It's a good match, actually. I enjoyed it. Although, because I haven't been down, because of the pandemic, I haven't been down for probably about two and a half, three years. And I took my son down, and it was his first game down there. I grabbed his arm after about 10 minutes. I said, Christ, I forgot how stressed I get. It's kind of stressful as listening to it on the radio, but when you're actually there, it's incredibly stressful and frustrating, but you know, we all love it. I saw Callum Powell come on. Blimey, he's direct.
I like
the look of him. Noor Hussein, he looked class. Lopata, I mean, I know he's on loan, but I mean, he's classy, you know. I don't know whether there's any chance of keeping Lopata or Matt Dennis. I'm guessing not, but I'm guessing they're going to go either back to their... Well, I know Norwich are letting Matt Dennis go, aren't they?
I believe, well, I could be wrong, but someone told me they've already told him that.
So yes.
They're not sort of stringing him along.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love it if he could stay, but I'm guessing he could play in League Two or even League One.
Yeah, I think if he, well, what, how many games we got left? So we've got about 14 games left, something like that. So say he gets another, one in every two, I think he could probably get himself a League One club, sadly.
Sadly for
us, anyway, great for him. But
Exactly. You don't want to stop people. You know, you don't want to get cross with people for moving on.
Being
more successful.
I think the recruitment now is doing that. It's signing these younger players that are on the way up rather than the older players that are on the way down.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we've had a few of them. I mean,
Just a couple.
I did watch, again, I won't say any names, but I did watch on iFollow, and a couple of players came out, and you go, blimey, they could lose a bit of timber. Crikey, are they training?
You don't need to name names. I let me know who they are.
Yeah, I think most listeners will know as well. And it's me. I was actually saying this to somebody earlier today. I don't think many football clubs suffered a worse lockdown period than Southend did. We actually got relegated twice in an era where fans couldn't even go. Like that is bleak.
Yeah, that is. You're absolutely right. That hadn't occurred to me actually. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Fans couldn't go, so we couldn't even vent our anger. I must tell you, when I went to Solihull Moors, it's a long story, but basically, Southend United found out that I was going to come down, so they got in touch, and it's really kind of them, and through Matt Mundy, who I owe a big thanks to, at Southend United, they said, "Yeah, come down with your son. We'll put you in the director's box." So I went. Great, how lovely, you know. And we went to the captain's bar and all this kind of business. And of course, we sat down, and it only occurred to me when I sat down, it was packed. The director's box was packed. And after about 5 minutes, I stood up and shouted at the ref. And I just went, oh no, you can't do that in here. You can't shout, what the fuck are you doing? In the director's box, because there are actually directors in here and people, sponsors, and that. So I had to sit down and bite my tongue for the next 85 minutes. Not that I shout at the ref that much, but I leave that.
Oh, you will if you watch more games at this sort of level. They're not the best. Yeah.
There were some astonishing decisions, I have to say. Again, not naming names, but he was the referee.
Yeah, there's been some absolute stinkers this year, ref, believe me. Only better ones, believe it or not.
There has been a couple of absolute shockers.
Yeah. So what do you think? I'm going to ask you a question now. So we don't think that, you know, I mean, the dream would be we get into the playoffs and would be a miracle and then we go up. Realistically, what's the future? We build with this team for next season and go for automatic promotion. Is that it? I suppose it is.
Do you want to go? Go on, Farms. You go first.
Yeah, I think it just has to be logistically. Yeah. You know, stuff and the age of the squad. I think it just has to be. I think if we wasn't to this is jumping the gun a bit. If we didn't even reach the playoffs next season, I think that would have to be a failure.
Yeah.
That sounds like I'm being a bit jumping the gun a bit, but I just think that has to be the aim. And if you don't reach that, that's a failure ultimately. I wouldn't have said that earlier this year, believe me. But I think now we've actually got a really good foundation, a good management, good players, good age. They seem to all get on, which is always a touch. Yeah, we've had a squad that didn't seem to talk to each other for the last 3 years. So I just think that would be that will have to be the aim.
Yeah,
I agree. I think you know you can't get by on just being a big club just on merit, because we are a big club to be at this level. But you know, so are Notts County, so are Chesterfield, Stockport, Wrexham. You know, there's bigger clubs than Southend have fallen into the National League and they've struggled to get back. Like quit Luton, Oxford didn't take them like two or three seasons. It was a long time. Right. So yeah, there's no God given right to bounce straight back. But
can't we pay someone? Can't we all just collect, you know, tenner each, and then give it to the National League and go, can we go now, please?
Ron's probably me, so.
But no, I am in agreement. Yeah, I think, you know, this season, for the remainder of this season, I think there's, from a fan's perspective, it's about having some fun again, because, you know, we were robbed of that for so long, you know, as I just said, during the lockdown spell. And yeah, let's just see what happens, because we're not going to go down now, which I think is the biggest plus. So anything that we can do should be considered already an achievement.
Yeah.
I think we potentially have already done some. Well, we're doing long term recruitment now. I think So someone like Lapata's no doubt going to go back to his parent club, but we probably have already signed the player to replace him in the young lad Kensdale. So I think there's lots of building blocks already being done for the future.
Yeah, he looked good when I was down there.
Yeah, I liked. That's the first time I've seen him. Yeah, I liked the look of him.
Yeah. And Leon Davies, he looked pretty good. Also, you know, with Kevin Mayer and his team, you know, with Curry and Bentley, they just seem to really know what they're doing.
It's a bit of an overused phrase, that, but they just seem to understand, they get it. They understand the fans.
Yeah.
And just that, I guess, the connection between the two.
It's a joy to watch, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is now.
And their passion. Their passion is a joy to watch as well. Yeah.
So you got any away games lined up? Any home games lined up? Or do you not really do? Are you just going to pick and choose?
We'll get to an away game.
Yeah, I'll pick and choose, really. It depends on work and family commitments and whether we're in London that week or whether we're down in the West Country. I'm going to come along to a couple more games this season, but I just don't know which ones.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know.
Is that your boy's first game at Southend, was it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, he loved it. He absolutely loved it.
He's got to come back now. We're unbeaten when he comes.
Yeah. I've got to bring him along. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, all the near away games have already gone.
It's quite a northern league.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But there were some that weren't too far from West London, Aldershot and Woking, Wealdstone, I think it's quite near.
Yeah. That was right at the start of the season, Wealdstone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was filming, darling. I was filming. Sorry about that.
That was probably your new. Mm. What was your reaction to the great? Was that his first game, ever football game? Because I was thinking he might have gone to maybe like a Tottenham or something, and he's going, what the fuck is this?
No, I have taken him because we're not far from Brentford. In fact, I've seen Southend a couple of times away to Brentford since we've lived in West London. And I've taken him to Brentford a couple of times. But because I'm not, because I don't, I mean, sorry to Brentford fans, because I don't really, I'm not invested in it. It was just taking him to a football match.
Mm.
You know, he didn't pick up on my vibes of my excitement of my, you know, so he sort of said that going to Southend was way better than going to Brentford. Because of that, I think, because his dad was going, we're in here, come on. And, you know, whereas I just sat and watched the match there, it was like watching it on the telly, you know. So I think he picked up on that. So, yeah, he's a shrimper, for sure.
Good man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in for a lifetime of heartache, but good man.
I know. I have sat him down and warned him. Yeah.
I guess got final question. Score prediction for the game on Tuesday against Grimsby. You going to keep that unbeaten run going?
I think we can. Yeah, I think this group of players have really got their tails up, and I think having crawled their way back to from losing to drawing in both matches. One at the weekend just now, and one last week, Solihull Moors. I think they've got that spirit that that they can beat anyone in this league. I think it'll go 2-1. 2-1 to us.
Solid, yeah. I'm not going to disagree. I fancy this as well, to be honest. Yeah, I think we'll get 3 points there.
Yeah, I think we will. I think, and I read in the paper that Matt Dennis left. On crutches. I'm I'm hoping that's just so you know, he's not putting any pressure on it and making it any worse, rather than it's already that bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be a shame from
the radio commentary. It kind of felt that he was only playing about 70%, because they were saying on the radio that at one point, you know, Kevin Mayer was trying to sort of G him up and sort of go, you know, but they were saying that he doesn't, he looks a bit injured. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the benefit we do have though is now we've actually got subs to come in, like Power can just come in and start the game.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Certainly some good options, man.
Yeah, and Harry Cardwell, who looks a great prospect as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's injured.
He's injured at the moment, but.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, thankfully, I don't think it's anything too long term, is it? Not that I'm aware of, anyway.
Right.
I'm not.
Yeah.
But as you say, at the moment, everything's really, really positive for once, isn't it?
It's positive. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel a bit weird.
I know. Yeah, it's great to be a Shrimper. And it hasn't been for quite a few seasons. I think we have to leave with a positive attitude, and I think we'll win, and I think we'll be in the Premier League in 3 years' time. No, you can't do it in 3 years' time.
We'll form a new Super League. We'll get in somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. We'll pay someone off. Honestly, that's the way to do it. That is the way.
That's what the top clubs do anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Hasn't quite worked for Wrexham yet, has it?
If it does, it's embarrassing, isn't it? But
yeah. They're starting to motor a little bit now, aren't they? They might have peaked just at the right time. We'll only know that at the end of the season, obviously. But yeah, they've become a little bit of a juggernaut in the last month or so. But yeah, it's just with the money, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
I recorded the first series of my radio sitcom, Bravo to Charlie's, which is on series three. Part of series three is on iPlayer, actually. On BBC Sounds, rather. It's about the North Wales Traffic Police. And we recorded the first series in Wrexham, and we had a lovely time. So I like Wrexham, and I love it. And we've recorded all the series. We've done three. We've recorded them all in North Wales, around Wrexham or Llandudno. And I love North Wales. You know, we might be going back up there to do another one. There we go. Oh, one little plug. There's a show I'm in, starts on Channel 5 on Saturday night, called Queens of Mystery, which is a very sort of very stylized kind of murder mystery thing, but its tongue is firmly in its cheek. And I play Detective Inspector Thorne. Very grumpy. Very grim, but a lot of fun to shoot, a lot of fun to film, and that's on Channel 5 at 9:15 on Saturday the 12th.
Well, there you go. We'll put that on the the Twitter.
Yeah,
account.
We'll plug that for you. No
brilliant,
problems
brilliant.
At all.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think
thanks, guys.
I think we're about there. Yeah, no, thank you very much for taking the time to chat to us. Yeah,
no, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it, and we'll do it again.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
You don't have to let us know, yeah, as obviously your schedule can be a bit all over the place. But yeah, if there's a game that you're coming to, you'll have to let us know. We'll come say hello.
Yeah, I'll give you a shout, definitely.
Perfect.
Lovely to chat, guys.
That's all right. I really enjoyed it.
Come on, you Blues! See you, guys.
See you, mate. Bye. Thank you.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.